a better way. And we are live. We're just a few minutes late, but I will take a, I guess you would call executive privilege here on having just completed a really long week and a half of prep and execution of a workshop. As you can hear, my voice is a little bit hoarse. I thought about just running the audio from my presentation on sausage making from the workshop, but I really want to do a bit more detail on it than I had time to do in the workshop. I gave all the presenters 45 minutes to present in. And this probably won't be like a, you know, 2 hour podcast like some of them go, but it'll probably be a little bit longer than 45 minutes and have some more detail and give me an opportunity to interact with a lot of people. If you did see the live stream of that presentation, this will be different and it will be geared, even though I'll be using the same PowerPoint deck, more toward you guys that are audio only, that don't come to the live feeds or watch the video. You listen to it, you know, gardening, working out, driving your vehicle while you're at work with your headphones or the radio at a reasonable volume or what have you. So that's what we're going to do today. And we're going to talk again about sausage making. And I want to come out of the gate with this and say, like, is this a prepper skill? No, it's not a prepper skill. Not really. I think if we were dealing with zombies trying to kill us and we had some fresh meat available, we'd probably just eat it rather than turn it into sausage. But it is absolutely a homesteader skill. It is absolutely a permaculture skill. It is absolutely a culinary skill, obviously. I would also call it a lifestyle design skill. Many of you guys have gotten into eating healthier and, you know, maybe you're on the ketovore or carnivore path or even just the primal paleo path. And you think, well, you know, the one thing I can do is I can go out and buy some sausage because it's basically meat and seasonings. Well, it is if you make it. But I think you'll find if you start reading labels that most sausage that's made in the market today has sugars in it, which in most instances don't need to be there. If it's natural sugars because you're using something like, I'm going to give you a recipe today for an apple and pork sausage. That's fine. That is what it is. But why is there corn syrup in a bratwurst? You know, to quote another movie reference, I doubt you'll know what this one is unless you really think about it. But why does bratwurst have need of corn syrup, right? So when you make it yourself, you can make things actually healthy. You know what's in it. But the other thing that you're able to do when you make your own sausage is do things that no commercial producer is doing. The three recipes I'll give you today, I guarantee you've tasted nothing like them out of a grocery store or even like a custom butcher shop, because they're just not kind of done the way that I did them. And you may not really want to do them that way, but that's the beauty. You can do it your own way. And it's really not a hard thing. As you'll see when we get going, we've been doing this as humans for a very, very, very long time. Before we do that though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Above Phone. Above Phone is a great way where you can kind of take back your technology with your own private ecosystem of apps from the Above Phone app store. You can do everything with an Above Phone that you do with your other phone, except some things you won't be doing. Getting spied on by the device manufacturer, getting spied on by your provider, and getting spied on by the app maker. How about all of that goes away? How about you have more freedom and more privacy at the same time? Check them out today at abovephone.com and know that they will give you $75 off any phone at abovephone.com if you're an MSB member. Next up today, the Berkey Guy at usaberkeyfilters.com. We've been working with Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason for a very, very long time, and he's always been a great guy to this audience. There has been a shortage of Berkey filters, but right now, if you want to buy a new system, they are available and they do come with filters. He has a waiting list right now. If you're looking to buy filters, you can fill out and get notified as they come into stock. He actually has them coming into stock and going out of stock very quickly. So you might not see them on the site, but if you get kind of in line, so to say, and you've been looking to replace those filters, you can do it through Jeff. This has to do with a lot of bullshit, just to be blunt, that the United States government has pulled. And I have a feeling, this is not like a super pro orange man thing, but I have a feeling very soon that problem is going to go away, because there's been a lot of Well, excessive use of regulatory agencies, the Justice Department, et cetera, that have nothing to do directly with Trump, not even indirectly. We did have the Chevron doctrine fall. That is helpful, but there's more to it than that. And so I do think that problem will go away. There's been a lot of companies kind of regulated in very negative ways by a bureaucracy that continues to grow. And if they're getting their heads chopped off, which seems like it is going to happen based on some appointments that we've seen come out, then they may not have time to go out harassing companies. They may have to actually defend themselves and possibly shrink or some of these agencies even go away. That'd be great. But anyway, that's an aside. Let's talk about let's talk about sausage. Let me get this on instead for you. And I need to jump way back here. I am using a PowerPoint deck today. If you want to find the video and you're hearing this on audio right now, of course, you can go to the website and you'll be able to find it there. But you won't really need it. There might be some things that helps to clarify. That's why I'm using it. But this should be suffice for you audio only folks to listen to. I'll also tell you, I'm going to talk about a lot of different equipment and gear and recommendations today. The audio notes have links to everything. And those audio notes, of course, are in a link. If you're watching the video, right down in the video notes. If you click it while we're live, it won't go anywhere because we're not done yet. About a half an hour, maybe today, is brain fogged as I am, an hour after we're done, that audio version will go out on the podcast services and you can get all of the resources and things there. So let's start off with the history of sausage. What is sausage? I know that sounds like a ridiculous question because we've all eaten sausage, so we're all like, well, I know what sausage is because I've eaten sausage. But what I mean by what is sausage is what makes it sausage? What makes it sausage versus, say, if it's a loose sausage versus a meatball? Well, starting out, it's highly seasoned and mixed meat. But the mixing is really the key. When we mix something like a meatball or a meatloaf, or let's say a season, like an inside seasoned burger, we want to be kind of ginger with the meat. We don't want to over mix it. We don't want to like start extracting fats and emulsifying the proteins together. If you do that with something like a meatball, you're not going to get a soft, fluffy meatball. You're going to get a more dense product. Well, when you eat sausage, it's kind of dense, right? And that density comes because when we mix sufficiently, we actually begin to emulsify the fat and bind it with the protein. And that's why, you know, if you look at the extreme example of that, believe it or not, a hot dog is actually a type of sausage. And that's excessively mixed to the point where it's almost like a paste when they stuff a hot dog. But it's firm to the touch. So you want a sausage to be somewhat firm. And we've been doing this for a long time. So about 3,500 years BC or BCE, depending on the terminology used, which is about 5,500 years. And that's only based on like recorded history so this is not something new. The reason I point that out is to give you confidence. If hunter-gatherers, you know, thousands of years ago could stuff seasoned meat into an intestinal case, well, we can do that too. And so that 5,500-year number is based on, like, records found in Sumeria, written records, some of the earliest written records we have noting sausage. But if you examine indigenous cultures, many of them have forms of sausage that they make, you know, right, let's say, you know, in the field, but really they usually have some form of settlement. So soon after a kill, a lot of the product may be actually made into sausage for various reasons, some for culinary, some because they're good things to store, et cetera, like that. I'll remind you today, guys, if you want me to answer questions, you really do need to put the word question in all caps, and that'll make sure that I see it. Okay, so next thing I want to go is, like, when it comes to making sausage, there's no hard and fast rules. Like, if you don't do this, you're wrong, and you're going to lose your sausage maker's card or something like that. But there are some common practices, and common practices are a good way to give yourself confidence so that you'll be willing to try something rather than follow just like some guy's generic recipe. And I'm also going to give you a recipe tool, and hopefully that will help you kind of launch into your own versions thereof. But every time I do a new recipe from now on, I'll be adding it to that tool. That tool set is already in the MSB. It's, I would say, free for all MSB members, but MSB is a paid service, but it's just been added no additional cost, and you can't buy it. The only way you can get it is to be an MSB member. But the real reason we want to have these common practices is they are the initial restrictions. You can break them, but they're the initial restrictions to give you kind of a guideline. Like, where do I go? How do I get there? And think of it like designing a living room. If I give you a giant building with no walls, like 1,500 square feet rectangle, put in a living room, you know, furnish it, you know, furniture, TV, all that stuff. You're kind of like, I don't really know where to start. But if we put some walls in, you're like, well, that's obviously the kitchen. That looks like the dining room. Those seem like bedrooms and bathrooms. So this is the living area. There's the walls. And maybe it's three sides because you have an open floor plan. You got windows over here. You know, you don't really want to put the TV up against the window. So you're looking at, like, you all of a sudden you can start like, okay, I can put a chair here. There's a fireplace there. I put the TV over, whatever you want to do. But those guidelines make things easier to understand. So what I like to start off with is my guidelines are some ratios. These are kind of the master ratios that you use, again, as a starting point, not necessarily the things you have to do, okay? But when you look at your meat to fat ratio, so your lean to fat, you want it, like, ideally, just like making a great burger, 80-20 is hard to beat. You could get up to about 70-30, so you have 30% fat, before you just get to where you have too much fat. And again, since we want to bind fat and protein together, if you get too much fat, you don't get a good bind. And when you cook your sausage or smoke your sausage, most of that fat's just going to run out. It's not going to hold in there. And that's why a lot of sausage makers use binders that we'll talk about in a minute. But if you use a good ratio and a good mix, you probably won't need to use a binder. Salt, you want to be at about 1-2% of the total weight, not of the product itself, but 1-2% of the meat and fat weight. So that's a real simple calculation to do with the tool that I'm going to give you later on. And I'm actually going to demonstrate the tool for you when we talk about that. But 1-2%. Now, 2%, to me, that's more for like a sausage that you're going to ferment or dry age or something like that to make sure the salinity is high enough. When I've gone as high as 2% with my fresh sausages, they just seem a little bit oversalted. When I go 1%, they seem under. So you guessed that 1.5 is kind of where I start everything at with my sausage. I use, and you'll see this later, but I use pounds for my meat, and I use grams for everything else, because some of the stuff that you might be like a tertiary ingredient might be really, really small. Doing that ounces is a pain in the ass. If you're comfortable with your meat being in kilos, then if you do that, everything is simple. But that's why I make a spreadsheet, so it stays simple. And I stick to my meat in pounds for a very simple reason. We think in pounds in America. We just do. I've grown up my whole life with pound. I know what a pound is. So if I'm going to make a 15-pound batch, I know what that means. In my head, I kind of know what that looks like. If you tell me I'm going to make like a 7-kilo batch, I know that's around somewhere between 14 and 18 pounds, but I'm really not sure. So that's why I stick to pounds for the meat. If you're doing a cold smoke or you're doing like a fermented sausage, you do not actually need to use what they call pink salt or like your curing salt. Or in some instances, and I don't have a ratio for this one, a lot of people now, they want to be all natural for nitrates, are using like celery powder or celery juice because it's high in nitrates. But it is helpful. It helps with the suppression of diseases. If I was doing it in anything approaching a commercial environment, like even just a big gathering where people are going to be there and I have a risk of being sued, I would use it. What I said at the workshop is I'm more afraid of being sued than I am of being poisoned when it comes to doing this. We've been making cured sausages for, you know, thousands of years, and using nitrates is relatively new, but that would be a ratio, 0.25% for, again, those applications. When you're making fresh sausages that are going to be hot smoked or simply frozen and then cooked or cooked right away, there's absolutely no need to use any nitrates whatsoever. I'm not anti-nitrate. I just don't like to pay for things that are unnecessary. If you want a binder, something to make sure that you do not get crumbly, loose, fall apart sausages, and you're going to hold your fat in more. Again, if you mix well, you probably don't need them. but there are two different primary binders other than like some people use like breadcrumbs, which I really don't want to do that. These two products are not going to in any way really alter your nutritional macros if you're primal, paleo, keto, etc. One is milk powder, and milk powder is used at about 2 to 4%. Again, I have links in the show notes where you can see where this stuff is. And again, I've never used it, but you can. C-bind is made from carrot. It's a very small amount of carrot or a very small amount of C-bind necessary in your sausage, a half of a percent by weight. But again, these are added expenses. But if you want to make sure your sausage has that kind of pleasing snap, or you're playing around with something that you think could benefit from binding, those are your options. Liquid, about 10% by weight. I've seen recipes that are like, we'll use apple juice in an apple and pork sausage because it reinforces the app. No, I've gotten nothing out of it. I've tried beer. I've tried about the only thing that I found that makes sense to put into a sausage for flavor is like a wine or a cognac or an Armagnac. You'll get duck and Armagnac sausage. You'll get some carry through a flavor, but more like a lot of people say use a like a bone broth or whatever. That's fine. But I use most of the time, I just use water. And the reason for that is it's going to loosen it up. It's going to make it flow through the stuffer a little bit easier. But the big reason is you're going to find you're using a lot of spices and seasonings. And generally, most of them are dehydrated, right? They're dried. So when we add that liquid and we recreate that mix, we get a better rehydration of those. And that spreads their flavor better throughout the rest of the sausage. When it comes to your seasonings, and this is totally up to you. What is a primary season? What is a secondary? And what is like an adjunctive or tertiary? But basically, you want to start off with about 0.5% by weight, 0.5%. That's 0.5 there by weight of your primary seasoning. So if your primary seasoning was sage, you want to be 0.5% of your total weight. You want to use about 0.25% for your secondary, your supporting cast. And if you're looking to do something with like just a little hint in the background, that would be your tertiary. You're going to drop down to 0.15%. That would be like maybe throwing a little bit of clove in something just for a little bit of like this. It could be totally overwhelming if you went too high with it. But like my Jamaican jerk chicken that I'm going to give you the recipe for in a bit. If I made that again, I probably, even though it's got allspice in it, would throw a little bit of clove in it just to give, just bring that out a little bit more. And then when you're using fresh sausage, with your sausage, if you're using fresh seasonings, let's say chopped peppers, chopped apples, et cetera, I don't really have a ratio for you for that. And I've never found anybody that can come up with a good one because there's a big difference between what contribution, you know, a handful of apple chunks do to a sausage than a handful of jalapenos. And then there's a big difference between a handful of jalapenos and a handful of like Serranos or Fresnos or Scotch bonnets. So I'll give you some recipe formulation ideas in a minute, but when it comes to your fresh ingredients, it has to be a little bit more gut-based and intuitive. And the other thing is when I am using fresh ingredients like that in the process, they don't go in at the same time as the dry spices and seasonings mostly, and I'll get to that in a bit. All right, so let's talk about equipment. And I've kind of give you each one and then tell you like you really need this if you're going to make sausage more than, let's say, once where you're going to completely down and dirty it, or it would be really nice to have or I wouldn't have it on the list. First of all, you need good knives and sharpening tools. And the number one knife that I use in my sausage making, whether I'm making a chicken sausage and I'm boning out thighs or I'm just breaking down a pork shoulder, is, you guessed it, as I mentioned a million times now, the Victorinox semi-stiff 6-inch boning knife. That is my workhorse knife. I probably should have 10 of them. I have two. Really, one starts to get dull, just set it aside and grab another one. That's what pros do. And then you could sharpen them all at the end of the cycle. But you want good, sharp steel for this work because it ends up being a lot of work. And when you are doing a lot of work, every little thing that kind of makes it easier makes the whole process seem a little bit less laborious. I love doing this, and I want to always love it. So I'm always trying to think of ways to make my experience pleasant, and you'll see more of that when you get into, like, it takes me quite a number of days to do a batch of sausage, because I break, like, this step on this day, then this step on the next day, and that way I don't burn out and wear out. And it was a good thing I did that, because this year I made 75 pounds, 325-pound batches for the workshop, and I made, like, roughly 3 10-pound batches, this first generation of each of these new recipes, to test them all the way through the process. You need a good grinder. To me, this is essential. I know you can chop meat with two knives, right? You can put it and pulse it in a meat grinder and all. If you wanted to do that for a pound or two, that's not a big deal. I mean, it really isn't. That's fine. But, you know, if you're going to start making regular 5 10-pound batches, and I think everybody in this audience, that if you grow your own meat, if you hunt, if you cut your own meat and you have trimmings, a good grinder is a good way to go anyway. In the image there, the grinder on the bottom is the STX Turbo Force. That's on my website. That is the grinder that I currently use. And I did a lot of research when I bought it about 6 years ago. It's never let me down. In the sub-$200 class, there's nothing better. I'm not saying there's nothing that's good. I'm saying there's nothing that's any better under $200, and they're about $150. I'm looking at upgrading to like a Cabela's Carnivore or something else in like the number 32 size, like one that'll take your arm off if you're not careful, just because they're so much faster and better. But you want a good grinder. You want a good scale. And you need a scale not just for your spices, your seasoning, and your salt. You need a scale for your meat. I do not care that you bought the package of meat and you're going to use the whole package as it is, and it says 12.7 pounds on it, and it's a brisket. When you weigh it, when you're done cutting it up, it will not weigh 12.7 pounds. Most of the seasoning and spices you're using, if you were to be a little bit over, it won't really be that big of a deal. But if it's cayenne pepper, then all of a sudden faces are exploding. But the big one is salt. Once you dial in the salt ratio you like for your sausage, you want to be sure. So you want to know those two meat. And then there's other things that will come on, like, you know, when I make brisket sausage, the brisket is always way more fat than I need. So I'm always taking a big fat cap and repurposing for something else. So I need to know what's left after I do that. When I make chicken sausage, I use one cut only, the thigh. It's cheap. It's high in fat. The skin works beautifully. I do skin and meat together in sausage from chicken. And obviously, once you take all those bones out, you can save it for bone broth or whatever. All that weight is gone. So you need this is not optional is what I'm saying. You want a stuffer, and I'm going to talk about those in a second, but I'm going to tell you, well, you only need a stuffer if you want to do link sausage. But if you start doing sausage, you're going to want to do link sausage. Now, here's the bad news. There's no really amazing, great, 100% reliable, you can count on it, take it to the bank, sausage stuffers at the consumer level. The cheapest sausage stuffer I have found that's like at the commercial level that would be borderline for like a small delicatessen making their own sausage, about $4,000. I talked to Anton. He was at the workshop. His sausage stuffer, it's about a $10,000 stuffer. And these commercial stuffers do not use gears. They use hydraulics, right? Like a lift. And they actually push up from the bottom with that hydraulic piston and come out the top. So he's got 10 grand in his. If you were part of a big local community and you wanted to share use of one, because it's not something you're going to use every day, you can find entry level stuff that's hydraulic in $4,000 to $5,000 range. Probably since they sell the commercial applications, really good support, et cetera. Understand that when a manufacturer puts commercial as a label on a product, it means absolutely 100% zero. It means nothing. There's no regulation or requirements around the use of the word commercial. That just means we think our shit's pretty good. Why do I say all this? Because in deep diving this, after having an electric stuffer from Vavor fail on me, and fail after only two uses, to where the gears would just skip, I came to the conclusion that all of these things at our consumer level, from a couple $100 up to $600-$700, are all made the same factory or three. They're all made in China. I don't care if it's LEM. I don't care if it's meat. I don't care who it is. When you buy a sausage stuffer, when you start looking at the parts compatibility, how they're put together, how they're shaped, what the buckets look like, etc., it's all the same. So I ended up, even though the Vivor Electric one they gave me for free failed, buying the same size bucket in a manual crank stuffer that has worked perfectly for me. And I've had no trouble with it. And I think it's because since you're doing the cranking, if you really get to a stuck spot, you can kind of back off and whatever. That electric one just keeps pounding. There is a tremendous amount of pressure when it comes to pushing meat out of a tube that you can almost stick your head in, and it's coming out of a horn that's maybe a half inch in diameter or smaller. That reduction in size is a lot of pressure, and those gears skip. So I'd recommend at least starting out with a manual stuffer, and I would get one big enough to make batches of the size you plan to make in a single go. When you set these things up, it's a pretty easy, straightforward process, but like finishing, like if you bought a 5-pound stuffer and you're going to make 10-pound batches, having to then extract it, put another five, and do it again, it's more trouble than you think that it is. And it's probably worth the variance. And I would tell you kind of a sweet spot for batches is somewhere between 10 and 25 pounds, depending on how much you want to make. So a 15-pound mixer or a 15-pound stuffer is a really good way to go as your minimum, but you don't have to. A spice grinder. We had a question here about spice grinding. I'll try to take that at the end, but you're going to want to grind certain spices. And you can play with some are ground, some are not. Sometimes I grind half of the spice and put the other side in whole. I do that with fennel. So I get a lot of fennel flavor through the meat, and I put whole seeds in, and sometimes they go into the meat before grinding, sometimes after. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But what I use for a spice grinder is the Mr. Coffee grinder that I use for coffee and spices all the time. Another option, though, is to use a food processor for this. And again, I have links to all this stuff in the show notes today that'll be up once the live's over. And a food processor is really nice. When you start to step up into like 15-pound batches, when you start putting all of this together, it ends up being a significant amount of spice. And, you know, you just toss it all into a food processor and just watch it go until it's where you want it. Now, whether you toast spices or things like that, that's strictly like chef's prerogative, I would say, at that point. But one or the other or both, most people have, you know, one or the other already. So, you know, use what you have, especially when you're just experimenting and starting out. And then, you know, do you grind? That's kind of a question we have here. The spices, again, it depends. If you put fennel whole into a sausage, it's probably going to come out pretty damn good. If you put something that tends to be a little bit harder, even when somewhat rehydrated, like cumin seed whole into a sausage, you're going for the kind of chorizo level thing, it's probably not going to work out as well. So think about, do you want that big hunk of spice in there? How small do you want to ground? That's one of the beautiful things about this. You choose for yourself. Now, a mixer. And if you look at the picture, those of you on the video, up in the right-hand corner, that's a meat mixer. I would have said, this is kind of nice to have until I started making big batches. I almost consider it essential now. When you make sausage, you want to keep that meat as cold as possible, as long as possible, all the time if possible. So usually you're pulling meat that was just, you know, you out of their freezer, right? You want to free, and we'll get about that in a second more. But what I do is I throw the meat in the freezer until it's almost frozen. Then I put it through the grinder. Well, you're either going to mix it right away, or maybe you toss it back in the refrigerator and mix it the next day. You could do either one. Either way, that meat is bone-hurting, not just bone-chilling, bone-hurting cold. You'll mix a batch for about a minute before you feel like you have your hands in salt water with, you know, salted ice water or something like that. It gets really, really cold really fast. If you're making 5-pound batches, it's not that big a deal. You start mixing 10, 15, 20, 25 pounds with that, it just hurts. And a meat mixer will cost you about $100.50 to $200. You throw all the meat in it. You turn the handle one way a few times. You turn it back the other way. You turn it back the other way. And the mixing paddles in it will have a way to remove it because you have to clean it. Pretty easy to clean. You pull that paddle out. Meat just comes out in your tub and you're ready to go. And after I got a meat mixer, I hated myself for making so much sausage across my life without having a meat mixer. I can't tell you how many times I'm like, do I really need this? No, no. And I mean, if you're like a person that cooks a lot for a lot of people, I would include things like meatballs and stuff with this too. No, we don't want to mix a meatball to the level we do a sausage. But, you know, we've done a lot of events where we've made freaking 50 pounds of meatballs. And it's always been the bottleneck is the mixing. So I would definitely look at a mixer if you're going to be doing this at any level, especially if you make a couple test batches and you decide this is something you want to do, then I would go ahead and make that investment sooner rather than later is what I'm saying. Meat tubs. So like these are bus tubs, bus tubs. I have a link in the show notes for the one I get from Rubbermaid. They make really inexpensive ones. They're kind of flimsy. I would, if you're going to, again, if you do larger batches, you know, spend $20 and get a really good solid one. When you're carrying around 20, 25, 30 pounds of mix and it's flexible, like the idea that you'd have that much invested in it, you're about ready to stuff and then the tub kind of twerks and then all your beautiful sausage goes on the ground. Not fun. Totally worth the extra. And then nitrile gloves. I don't really like the whole idea of like, that's another thing I resisted. Like, come on, just be a man. Don't worry about getting some ink on your hands or whatever. But after using them, I won't really make sausage or work with chicken or things like that without them. It is so convenient to just have a trash can. When your hands are all nasty, you're ready to go next step. You're not washing your hands and then coming back and then touch and then washing your hands again and transferring shit all over the place. Boom, boom, drop. You have about 2 cents a piece into them. So just throw them away and put on another set when you need them. Your life will be better for it. I will say a couple things about them. One, they have pretty good sensitivity. One place you do need to be careful, though, is things like boning chicken with them on. They are desensitizing enough to make it more likely to cut yourself. So slow down a little bit until you get used to it. The other thing I would say about them is if you think, well, I'll put these on and I don't worry about all the cold because they'll help. The cold transfers through them instantly. It's like they're not even there. Another place they are wonderful that I always use them now that I've started using them is when I'm working with hot peppers, because you don't like an hour later, forget that you worked with hot peppers and touch your face and now you're crying like a baby, right? Let's talk about my process. Number one, develop a recipe or find one. If you're making something and you want it to be like, you're not going out on a limb. You're not doing some of the things we're going to talk about in a minute. You're like, I just want to make a bratwurst. You know, I just want to make a basic Italian or a basic German wurst or something like that. It wouldn't be a terrible idea if you find a good proven recipe with good, you know, good reviews online, make it exactly the way that it's, you know, presented and then modify it. So you know what you've done. Kind of like when you get bees, you never want one beehive. You want two beehives because you're not a beekeeper yet. So you don't know what is good and what is bad. And even a beekeeper might not, you know, with some experience might not be like, really know what his bees should look like in June in Georgia if he spent his entire life in South Dakota. So you want something to compare it to. So that's kind of a really good piece of advice if you're going to start with a base recipe. Maybe make it as is or make one or two small modifications first. Then after that test batch, decide if you want to go forward with more. But don't be afraid to develop your own recipes. If you're like, man, these two foods go together all the time and nobody's done a sausage with them. Put those two things together in a sausage and if you know, it'll probably work. Now, if it's like carrots and potatoes, that's probably not going to make a good sausage. But when you're talking meat and like a seasoning or meat and a fruit, that's something that's probably going to work for you. Then you dice your meat and as you dice it, weigh it so you have a total on your meat, and that way you can make all your calculations. This is how you're going to adjust when somebody gives you a recipe for like 2 pounds, and you're like, screw that, I'm not pulling all my equipment out and doing all this work to make 2 pounds of sausage. I want to make 10 or 15. But then when you go buy your meat, you're like, well, actually, I have like 11.5 pounds. By having an exact number, you can easily use the tool I'm going to give you to calculate the difference. And if you don't, you know, if I don't have the sausage you're making, that's fine. You can easily make an Excel spreadsheet to do this on your own. I might actually have Tom add the underlying spreadsheet as a template for download to that page after this episode goes out. Hunter says, laugh out loud, Thanksgiving dinner sausage. But you know, you could. You could do a turkey cranberry sausage. You could totally do that. I would probably use dehydrated cranberries. And I would probably, even though I said that the liquid is not that important, I would probably actually use like a chicken or turkey stock, because those cranberries are going to absorb that and maybe stretch it a little bit. And then a gravy on top of that. Why wouldn't that be fantastic? If you're going to go carb in it, you know, do some stuffing, sliced turkey and cranberry sausage, except I think your guests are probably like, where's the damn big ass turkey, right? So, but you could, I just want to point out, yeah, you can do something like that. Then when all that meat is in the tub, there's a lot of different viewpoints on this. And I've tried all of this, and this is what seems to work best for flavor, for finish, and for ease for me. I take all my dry spices, sometimes some of my fresh spices, and after that meat's cubed up and in the bin, I mix it by hand, because you're not mixing a lot at that point. I just kind of mix all the dry spices in, and I take that tub and I throw it in a refrigerator overnight. You don't have to do this. It's what I do, and it's worked really, really, really well for me. The next day when I get time to grind, you know, so I'm scheduling my week out, if I'm going to cut and season today, I'm going to grind tomorrow. And so the next day, about 2.5-3 hours before I'm going to grind, I'll take that tub and I'll chunk it in one of my freezers. And I want that meat, when I pull that meat out, I want to be able to get some give on it, but I want it to feel like it's almost frozen. It will go through that grinder so much easier for you. It will come out in a much better shape and form. And I almost always go with a coarse grind and a single one-time grind with my sausages. I'm not trying to make something pasty like, again, like a bologna or a hot dog. So the more times you grind, the finer the proteins, the more emulsification you're going to get, and the closer to that texture you're going to get. For the sausages I'm going to give you, I did just a simple coarse grind for the pork and apple, and for the brisket jalapeno. I did what's called a wagon wheel grind, which is a really coarse grind on the chicken, because chicken gets emulsified really, really easy. That's why if I said chicken sausage, and you're like, duh, because you've had chicken sausage, and it's like, well, duh, this won't be. I guarantee you, if I gave you one of these, people that were in the workshop would tell you, and I told you it was pork, you'd probably think it was pork. I only actually did it with chicken, one, to prove I could make it not suck, but two was because I knew I'd have some non-pork eaters at the workshop, and because they use a beef collagen for casing, beef collagen casing, I knew that I would have two of my three sausages that were 100% pork-free. The next time I make that recipe, I probably will use pork. Because by the time you're done and said with all the trimming of the chicken and the labor and the and you can buy pork shoulder really cheap, it's faster and easier with pork. So I would try either one. And texture, JK saying texture is what makes the difference. It really, really is. Now, so we've par frozen and we are ready to grind. When I grind, often this is when I'm going to go ahead and incorporate fresh ingredients. I'm not probably going to put the apples that are shredded up in the meat overnight. It's sitting there and it's kind of exposed to the air. It oxidizes. The same with like chili peppers, or even fresh garlic cloves. And all of those are used in different versions of these sausages. You could. It probably won't hurt anything. I just tend to use all the dry spices first. I will also add the liquid that the recipe calls for at that point. And I will incorporate, and I will just dump it in and kind of mix it by hand with the cubes. And that way I'm literally grinding. If it's a brisket jalapeno, jalapeno slices are just going through with it. Little thing on peppers here. If you want to really blow brains out of people's heads, go ahead and don't deseed your peppers. But understand something that you're doing with a sausage. It's not true of like a stir fry. When you stir fry a pepper, you cook a lot of the capsaicin out. When you wrap something in a casing and you cook it as is, you smoke it maybe or grill it or what have you, that casing holds all that juice in, and you don't cook down pepper heat in sausage the way that you do in a pan. Then the next thing I do is I actually let it sit after grinding again. I'll let that sit overnight again. Because each of these is a process that has a big cleaning event that goes on after it. And that way I don't have a sink full of different pieces of machinery. And I feel the time that the sausage spends at each of these phases lends to the overall complete flavor. Now, I'm hoping, right, I'm hoping that you're starting to understand something here about why you'd want to do this at home. The process I'm laying out for you right now, it's very unlikely that any commercial vendor will do it. And it's also exceedingly unlikely most of them could afford to do it. Unless they're doing big batches of phases and they're doing each phase every day and each is coming into it. You can't really get the flavors to marry the way that what I've been making is doing, in my opinion, without this process. This is something I developed for convenience, but it became like, oh, wow, look at the difference when we take our time and do this process in a really artisanal way. So I'm going to let that sit overnight. The next day I'm going to mix it. Some days I literally mix it, throw it back in the tub, throw it back in the fridge because I don't have time. But at that point, if I have the time, I will go ahead and stuff. So that's a timing issue. I don't really think it contributes much. It doesn't change much about the finished product. But if you clean the mixer, you're done for the day. The next day, you just do the stuffing and you clean the stuffer. But once you stuff that sausage, if you're going to use it fresh, you can go ahead and cook it. If you want to cook like some to reward yourself for all this work. If you're going to freeze it, you can go ahead and freeze it. No problem. Yeah. If you are going to smoke it, you do not want, and you shouldn't, you really shouldn't do those two things anyway, but you can. I'll get to why you don't want to do it in a second. But if you're going to smoke it, you really, 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 one more time, really should put it in a tub and stick it back in the refrigerator overnight. When you let them, those casings, and this is any meat you're going to smoke, like even a brisket or a pork shoulder or something, season it, put it in, let it sit overnight. The surface gets tacky. And when it gets tacky and that smoke is wafting over it, the smoke has something to stick to. And smoke's kind of like if you've ever been to a place with clay mud, right? When you walk in clay, you seem like you get taller. Every layer of clay makes the next layer of clay stick more and more and more. And if you wanted to keep the mud off, you never let it stick in the first place. Well, when we're smoking something, we want those layers of smoke to keep adhering because you only get so much penetration into a sausage, right? It doesn't have the porosity that something like a pork shoulder does, and still we only get so much penetration. Most of your flavor when you smoke a meat is actually on the surface. That's why everybody fights over the bark on a brisket or a pork shoulder because that's where most of the flavor really is, right? So you want to form that stickiness, that pinnacle is what Ghoulie's saying right now. He's dead on. And so that's the way to do it. Now, the reason you really should throw it back in the refrigerator, even if you're not going to smoke it, the casings will dry out a little bit. They'll shrink up a little bit. The whole form of the link will get better. So your best practice is back in again. Okay. And then smoke and package or just package if you're not smoking. And I've come up with a way, let me see if it's on the next slide. I'll cover it here. I've come up with a way that I do my links. It's unconventional, but it's very fast and it's very utilitarian. I like to make sausage links 6 to 7 inches long per link. And I'll get to why I only use collagen casings in a minute. But one of the few issues with collagen casings versus what you would call a natural casing, which would be an intestine, is that they don't hold a twist really well. So if I use a natural, let's say a pork casing, I can grab where I want that link and I can twist just basically a single twist, pull forward and twist the next one the other way, pull forward and twist them until I'm done. And those twists will stay in that sausage. I can be all fancy and I can actually make them look like they're in a chain with like four links hanging per link of chain. But either way, I can do that. The collagen doesn't like to do that. So what I do, I use butcher's twine. I tie the end and I run out the link. And my formula is I make it 3 times the length I want plus 3 inches of the desired length. And what I mean by that, if I wanted a 7-inch link, 3 times 7 is 21. Okay. Then plus 3 would give me 24. So I'll make 2-foot long, straight links tied at both ends with butcher's twine. That's it. I'll even do that and bend it back over like you see in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen there. That's one piece. It's like one, two, three, four, and then a little small piece that was left over till the casing was used up. And that way they go on the smoker, and just about any smoker you're going to use, you know, you're laying them flat, you have 2 feet to work with at least. You let them smoke for about half of the smoke period, and you flip them over. And when you flip them over, you get a good smoke bath on both sides, because most of your smoke's going to stick to the top when you're doing sausage, because you're going to be indirect and your smoke is wafting over them. That makes everything super easy. But here's where this gets really cool. When you're done smoking them, they're cooked. Okay? So when you cut them, they're not going to like fall apart, break apart, whatever. They don't really need an end that's tight anymore. You take a knife, you cut them into thirds. You have 3 6-inch or 7-inch or whatever length you want sausages. When you put them into a freezer bag, you can see how they lay. That was a big bag because it was for the event. But they lay nice. They pack perfectly. And they cook. You know, when you bring them out, then you can do whatever you want with them. Again, I use collagen casings. And I do that for a variety of reasons. One, you know, I never know who I'm going to have over for dinner. Some people don't eat pork. And you got this wonderful brisket sausage they're happy to eat. Okay, great. But it has, you know, pork intestine casing. That's one thing. The other thing you have to do, though, is you have to rinse and soak these natural casings. And that's a little bit of an issue for me because it's one more thing to do. And I don't really want to do the one more thing. And so Anton, King of Biltong, is here right now. And he was here. And he uses kind of a ready-made natural casing because he's doing commercial with his Duors and his Calabanazi and stuff like that. But that's more of a specialized commercial product. Most of what you're going to buy, like if you buy on Amazon or something like that, is going to just not be that great, okay? It's just going to be extra work. That's what I'm looking for. The collagen casings, you pull them out, you put as much as you need on your stuffing horn, and when you're done, if you have that package left over, you throw the Ziploc bag, pitch it back in the refrigerator, always ready to go. So that's why I use those. Once I vacuum seal all those sausages, when you're smoking, it's great if you know, like you're doing pork and you want to get up to 145 degrees. You can say, all of it got to 145 degrees, you know. But you may not. You may not. And to me, a real easy way in an insurance policy and to get a really great form and hold, once they're all packed there, I throw them in a sous vide cooker. I set the temperature I want. And I sous vide them for, let's say, an hour and a half, 2 hours. They come out of sous vide, they go in a freezer. When that sausage comes out, I have no concerns about it being cooked other than it being as warm as I want it to be. So it's like a brown and serve at that point. And that would work also if you're not going to smoke. You could do the same thing, except you're going to have to link off at that point. You're not going to be able to cut them because they're going to extrude out the ends because of raw meat. But you could make a fresh sausage linked up, vacuum seal it, and sous vide it. And then when you pull it out, it's not going to be smoked, but it's ready to go. You could, as soon as it's hot, it's ready to eat. I do that all the time for events, big gatherings and stuff. Even if I'm buying stuff like bratwurst, I did that for this workshop we just did. For Wednesday night, I cook like 300 sausages, honestly. And I bought a case of bratwurst. And I vacuum sealed them all, and that way all I do is throw them on the flat top. So that's a convenience thing more than anything else. And I do formulate everything in grams because I just find it easier to do, especially when you look at, you know, you're adding something like clove or allspice or something. It's a very small amount. And grams, to me, just work better for that type of thing. All right. So the 4 sausages I made, and I made for the event, I'll tell you a little bit about them, and then I'm going to show you the recipe tool. But I made a pork, apple, sage, and garlic. I smoked that over mesquite. I kind of described that as Germany, Mary's Italy, because you have kind of that fennel Italian thing going on. But then you got the apples and the sage, which are much more like a German thing. Again, this is something you're just not going to find. Here's some things about this one, though. So the sage that went in there was fresh sage. And so the recipe that you'll get in the back end, you would need to convert the dry and reduce it by using the ratio that I gave you, because the ratio is out the window with a fresh seasoning because it weighs more because it has water. And so if you take a, this is important, if you take a recipe that was formulated with, let's say, dry sage, and you take the amount that they give you and you put in fresh sage, you're going to be under-seasoned. If you take one that was formulated with fresh sage and use that much dry sage, it's going to taste like sage. It's not going to taste like sausage. You're going to blow it out, right? So you want to be careful with that. And this is a good, you know, sausage to teach that on. So that sage went in the food processor with the spices, and it went on the meat as it was still cubed and then went through the grinder. The apples, totally different. The garlic, totally different. These were fresh garlic cloves. The garlic cloves and the apples were prepped before I even went and got the tub out of the freezer to grind. They were then mixed in as it was ground. And so the garlic went in fresh and the apple went in fresh. I also didn't add any liquid to this recipe, even though I said 10% liquid by weight. The reason was apples have a lot of liquid in them. So you have to make that decision for yourself as you're going on the fly. So that was that one. Again, this is in the MSB, the full recipe for it. There was also a brisket and jalapeno. Every one of these sausages had somebody that said to me when I said, which one did you like best? People picked different ones. The overwhelming winner, though, was this brisket sausage. Brisket is effing amazing in sausage. And it's one of the cheapest cuts of beef by the pound when you buy like a Prager brisket you can get. There's not much less expensive than brisket. I mean, people bristle when you say, I made stew out of brisket, right? Or I did a slow braised like brisket cut like they were short ribs, or, you know, I made brisket into burger and made hamburgers with brisket meat, like, or I made sausage. But because everybody wants the big giant smoked brisket that we're famous for in Texas. But it's incredible and it costs less. So all you're doing is spend more money to make a lesser product because you're worried about it. Tom here says he puts brisket in my chili. Me too, bro. Me too. Absolutely. It's one of my favorite meats for grinding. And a lot of times I might take a piece of it to smoke, like that beautiful point, and grind the rest. And I still have plenty of fat cap to work with. In the case of this, since I was making so much, that it was literally two briskets to make this batch. And that was made with jalapenos, but some of the things that go in there that really change the calculus, it also was made with smoked salt. And in addition to the smoked salt, it was made with smoked paprika. And so smoked paprika is very much a cornerstone to Spanish chorizo. So that's not the Mexican crumbly stuff that they put in eggs. This is the stuff that you would make something like a paella with. It was also similar to like a linguiça, which is basically the Portuguese version of chorizo. So that all went together, and that came out amazing. The jalapenos, those all went in just like the pork and apple. They went in at the time of the grind. I want to back up, though. If you're making a sausage, you're probably using garlic. Garlic powder, or I prefer granulated garlic and granulated onion for a lot of things, especially for this. They're fine for the underlying flavor. If you want to be forward with your garlic, if you want garlic to bite, to have a little bit of a spice, right? Because people that ate the pork and apple are like, what's the spice? It's garlic. Only fresh garlic's going to do that for you. And putting a hot thing and granulated garlic into something does not result in the same thing. Yes, there's a spice. Yes, there's an underlying garlic flavor. It's not the same. So that's why it's another reason, you know, you're not probably going to go into a Whole Foods or a Central Market, even where they make sausage on site every day, and pick up something with the kind of fresh garlic hit that had, or the kind of jalapeno hit. I find most sausages called jalapeno sausages are dog shit, honestly. Like, I've literally bought the same brand, jalapeno, no jalapeno, and the jalapeno one has more spice, but it doesn't really have the pepper flavor coming through. So if you use the fresh peppers, put them in the day of the grind, regardless of what that is. I also made a Jamaican jerk chicken sausage. This was not easy to formulate. I used Walker's Wood, which I've brought to you guys many times, talked about as item of the day or whatever. I've made a lot of jerk chicken, jerk pork, jerk shrimp, jerk everything with Walker's Wood. I used the mild because, again, in a sausage, you're going to hold the heat. And I was also making 25 pounds for 80 people. So I didn't want people to not like it or say I can't eat it. So I went with the mild. The other thing I did with it is I wanted more pepper than just the Scotch bonnets that are in the Walker's Wood. But I didn't want Scotch bonnets because at first I wanted enough that when you looked at it, I wanted you to see peppers in it. And I knew if I used Scotch bonnets that way, it was just going to blow people's brains out. It's hotter than I like hot food. That would have been hotter than I wanted to eat. It really would have. But I didn't want to use like a jalapeno because jalapeno is, even if you use a lot of them and get a lot of heat, the only way I can describe it is a dull heat. It doesn't have a sharp hit of heat, and it's not fruity even when they're red. It doesn't have that real fruity flavor that like a Scotch bonnet or a habanero does. So I went with the pepper I could think of that kind of did both. Like, it wasn't too hot, but it was hotter than jalapeno. But the heat itself had a sharp punch, but it had a fruit, and that's a Fresno. Fresnos look like slightly bigger than normal jalapenos, but the end is pointed instead of rounded. They're a little bit thinner walled. And Fresnos went great, great with this. Everybody seemed to like it. But this is what you tuned in for. I'm about to tell you something that you probably don't know. I've never heard anybody else talk about this. When I made this Jamaican jerk sausage, I wanted to make it as close to real jerk, like you would buy on the side of a road in Jamaica, as I could. So I did something I've done before, even though I knew better. I went out and I bought really expensive wood chips that come from the pimento tree. The pimento tree, not pimento peppers, is a different thing. The pimento tree grows all throughout the Caribbean, some in South Central America. And it's where the allspice berry comes from. Allspice is not a bunch of spices. It's one spice. And it tastes like clove and cinnamon and nutmeg, hence allspice, right? And it grows these little, they call them berries, but they more are like a seed. It's a hard little ball about the size of like a really small grape. And that is one of the secrets to jerk, is using allspice in your marinade, in your rub, whatever you're doing to flavor the meat. But the other thing that they do in Jamaica, they cook on this stuff. And so the thought is, you buy this expensive little bag of wood chips and you smoke with it and you lend that Jamaican character that you can only get in Jamaica to the food. It doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. And I'll tell you, it's not a scam. It just doesn't work. And it makes perfect sense that it doesn't work. If I were to make salmon, and I were to smoke salmon, and I smoke one batch of salmon over alder and another batch over apple, two mild woods, you're not really going to taste apple alder. There might be a little difference, right? But you're not going to be like, oh, I taste apple in that, right? So the compromise I came up with, and this was still limited in what it did, I took one of the little boxes that you smoke with. You put soaked wood chips in it, put the lid on it, it's got little holes in it. Basically, you have a little mini charcoal retort. You put it on over the flame, it heats up, smoke extrudes out the side. Beautiful smelling smoke. I also added bay leaf on the top of that. Bay leaf is similar in some ways to pimento and some of its esters and perfumes and flavor. And it was good. It worked, but it's not the same, and it's never going to be the same. So here it is. I don't know where you would get it, but if you want to know why Jamaican jerk in Jamaica, no matter, you get a Jamaican and bring them here, like one of the best in the world at it, and bring them here and give them everything he asked for, except green Jamaican pimento wood, he can't do it, or she can't do it either. So I found this video when I was doing this research. It was this old lady on the side of a road in the middle of nowhere. Turned out she was like 8 out of 10 years, the grand Jamaican champion of like the, you know, best in the country, voted in competition for jerk chicken and pork. And she's cooking on like a 55-gallon drum turned into a grill. This is the best there is there. That's these low-tech equipment, right? And I'm watching her make this stuff. And as she puts the meat on the wood, and I'll get to that in a second. But when she does that, she sends one of the guys down into like behind her house to break branches with green leaves off the tree. And she puts it on top of the meat. So the meat is perfumed by these leaves on these allspice trees, these pimento trees. And they, like, if you touch the leaves and smell your hands, it's kind of like if you do that with cedar or pine or a sagebrush. You have that smell on your hands. It's like that, except it smells like allspice. And it clicked for me. They are not smoking jerk. Jerk is not slow cooked. It's not smoked. It is kind of low temperature and it's smoky, but it's not the way we think of smoking a brisket or a rack of ribs. They have a hot coal base of pimento wood. They then have on top of the grill long uniform poles of pimento wood that's green. And when I say green, I mean it hasn't been seasoned. It was cut very like yesterday, maybe last week, maybe last month even, but it hasn't been seasoned. It's not dry. They lay that on the grill. They put the food on top of the wood to kind of like you do a plank salmon. They cook on top of that wood. That green wood is now drying out and its perfume is going into the food. You got it? And then it clicked as to why that whole system came to be. And again, I don't think anybody else is going to tell you this. Think about Jamaica. You're in Jamaica. You have to cook with wood. When is it winter in Jamaica? The answer is it's never winter. When do all the leaves fall off the trees and the trees go dormant? The answer is never. How long would it take you if you cut down a bunch of wood for fuel for it to dry out in Jamaica where the humidity is like 80%+ year round? And the answer is a long ass time. But if you have enough dry wood to make your first fire and you put that green wood on top of it today and you cook on top of it today, and then of course you don't let it ignite because it would burn up all your food, and you remove it from the grill when you're done with the cook. And by the way, all that wonderful grease and seasoning and flavors now in the wood, what is it also? It's dry. And today's top cook wood becomes tomorrow's fuel wood. And I don't know this, but I'm probably right when I say I bet this goes back to the slave days in Jamaica and needing to cook a bunch of food for a bunch of people cheap. So you season up the less than high quality cuts with all the Jamaican seasonings and the peppers for heat and all. And when you get done with that cook, you have your fuel for tomorrow. I don't know why anybody else has never figured that out. I don't know if the Jamaican mafia is going to come after me now because I just gave out a corporate secret or something. But that to me is why. If you wanted to get as close to that as possible in the United States, one thing we can grow like up to my area anyway is bay, and maybe bay, like green bay leaf tree would work. It is similar. Maybe green bay leaf on top would help. I don't know, but I think you'd get closer with green, you know, green stem apple used that way than you would with, you know, importing pimento wood, because my entrepreneurial brain was going when I saw how expensive this was. And I'm like, there are a few places in the United States you could grow pimento. Like really South Texas, really South Florida, really Southern Arizona, and really Southern California. Like those are Hawaii. Of course, it's probably illegal and invasive there because, you know, the only place where things are more invasive than Hawaii is Australia. Hawaii and Australia, like they ban everything. So, and with good reason. But that is a fantastic thing to know, because at least you won't chase a ghost. Or if you're going to keep chasing it, you can you know, work out maybe how to do it better. I also did a sage and pork breakfast sausage, which unfortunately, because I didn't label it, the cooks grabbed the wrong breakfast sausage out for the biscuits and gravy. There was not enough of it, and it wasn't as good. So I now have 25 pounds of this stuff in two bags, so 12 pounds a bag. Then I'm going to have to figure out what to do with it. It's frozen, so once I defrost it, yeah. The recipe for that is in there as well. It's a loose sausage, and it's really easy. I want to show you the recipe tool now. Let me bring this up. And so if you're not an MSB member, you may have never seen. This is the entry page when you log into MSB. There's some stuff down here. We also have some navigation up here. We've just added the recipe tool. When you get into the recipe tool, you'll see there's now four recipes, which I just gave you in there. I'll be adding some more because I have some older ones that, you know, I didn't make recently, but they're proven out. And every time I develop a new one, I'll just keep sending the data to Tom, and he'll add it to the MSB. But let's look at, let's say, the brisket jalapeno one. So when you pull that up, you'll see it'll default to a pound of meat, and you'll see what goes in it. And I'll read it for the people that are audio only. Smoked salt, diced and seeded jalapenos, smoked paprika, onion powder and garlic powder. I actually use granulated, but that just makes it universal. You get, you know, garlic and onion powder. Cracked cumin seed, and again, that's cracked. Cracked black pepper, cracked coriander, and ground red pepper flake. So that's like your red pepper flakes you put on pizza. It used to be in every Pizza Hut known to man. You would find a jar of those things. So that's the ingredients. Now, you'll notice that like the diced and seeded jalapenos, and again, everything but the meat in this tool is in grams. It's important that you know that. So that's this unit G. If we ever do something different, we'll change that G and you'll know. But let's look at the jalapenos just alone. 35 grams of diced and seeded jalapenos. So I'm going to go in and say, you know, we got a Packer brisket. By the time we trimmed off the fat to where it looked right, about 80-20, we ended up with 9.85 pounds. We hit update. Well, I think we can't go two decimals on there, Tom. So you have to take the five off, either round up or down. That's not going to be that big of a difference. It's not worth trying to fix. But right there, now we see that we are going to have 343 grams. So you'll see the adjusted quantity come out in a third column when you do that. So we know exactly how much of that to use. We started out with 6 grams of paprika. We end up 58.8 grams. We started out with 3 grams of cracked cumin. We end up with 29.4 grams. So this tool will allow you to make any adjustments you want. Again, you can, let's go to the sage and apple and fennel. You know, there we're at salt, fresh sage leaf, fresh ground black pepper, whole fennel seed, garlic, grated or chopped fresh apples, sugar, and dried thyme. I didn't break out that I split it in half. That's more of a technique than an ingredient. So it's up to you how you want to play with that little knowledge I gave you. We'll say you got 7.6 pounds of sausage you're going to make for the pork, apple, and fennel. That's how much pork you had left over from something else you did. There you go. You got all your numbers. It's that simple. And that tool is already in the MSB, just waiting for you to use it. So again, if you have any questions, make sure you put the word question all caps. I only have 2 right now available to you. Let me bring up that. That is the last slide. So I'm going to break that down right now. And we're about ready to go into questions. And again, if you have any questions for me, go ahead. If I'm a little bit off in my timing, I apologize. It's been a long week and a half getting through and ready for the workshop. But let's go ahead and take some questions here. And the first one comes from Ham Sandwich. Do you grind spices whole or any spice will do? And I prefer, obviously I said I grind the spices depending, but I prefer to use a whole spice and grind it at the, like, as close as possible to when it goes into the sausage. It's the same reason if you're a coffee snob, you don't want to buy pre-ground coffee, even if it's really good coffee. Once you grind it, those oils start to oxidize and vaporize and come off. And when it's whole, it holds on to its oils and its esters better. Another little hack you can do is toasting spices is a really great thing to do. Cumin and coriander are both really enhanced. You take a frying pan, throw them in there, leave them whole, toast them whole, and then grind them. And just kind of move the pan around or use a spatula if you're not, you know, skilled as a chef with, you know, sifting a pan around. And just until they really start to brown a little bit, and you, when you get that wonderful wafting flavor, you know, don't burn them. You're not roasting coffee. We're toasting a spice. There's a difference. Do I toast all my spices? No. But if I was using clove and I'm using whole clove, that's going to go in there. If I was using nutmeg, you got a big old nutmeg the size of like a walnut or a pecan. And once you shave it, like, I wouldn't toast that. So, you know, you can make that up for yourself. Then Hunter says, how much fits into a tube? I don't really understand that. I don't really know what you mean. If you mean, I'll put it this way. If you make a sausage roughly the size of a brat, worse in diameter, and most of the bratwursts you buy will be around 5 inches long. If you make a 7-inch sausage about the diameter of a bratwurst, though, you will get about 4 links to the pound, if that's what you're asking me. So you get about 1/4 pound per sausage. And that was kind of how we worked out the meal at the workshop, we want to give everybody a pound of meat. Like, we're not fooling around here, right? So we 3 quarter-pound sausages plus about a quarter pound of smoked pork shoulder. And then we had cowboy beans and roast potatoes and carrots. And if you didn't come, yes, now you're sad. And you should be, because it was an amazing meal. Now, Hunter also said, boil in a bag, okay? I haven't received a sous vide for Christmas yet. I would not boil a sausage in a bag. It's not, you know, when you have a sous vide, you're setting a temperature very specifically, and you're holding that temperature. 212 degrees is going to cause your casings of your sausage to explode inside the bag. So, no, I would not personally do that. Okay, I'm glad Hunter asked the next question. How small do you recommend for test batches? About a pound, and don't even bother trying to stuff that. Especially when you're formulating something new and you're really not sure. Formulate your recipe based on a pound. Make up a pound. You can mix a pound in your hands really easy. Let it sit at least overnight after you mix it. Make little patties out of it and fry it up like breakfast sausage. I'm going to tell you right now, it will not be the same. It's not 100% on what your end product's going to be like, especially if you're going to stuff it. But just the act of casing it and giving it time in the casing alone and leaving it form up is going to change some things. Now, somebody here said earlier that you can take Saran wrap and lay out, like, you know, kind of the shape of a sausage and roll it up and really, really tight, set that in the refrigerator and not case it. That works okay. It's not the same, but it works okay. And if you wanted to do that for a test batch, you could. I don't find it really makes that much of a difference. It changes the way it looks, but it doesn't change the hold, the bind. When we cook in a casing, there's pressure, and the casing holds against that pressure. And that is why a loose sausage that's exactly the same as a case sausage has a different way that it eats and a different way that it's flavored. When you have the casing, less of the flavor can escape during the cooking process as well. So I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying it may not be worth it. What I'm doing when I make a test batch, and I make like a pound, and if I have some pre-ground meat, I will totally use that. I don't really like pre-ground meat for make my actual batches. But for a test, and I'm going to make a beef sausage, I got a pound of beef, it's going to tell me what I want to know. My big things here are especially like things like peppers or like the pork and the apples. When you do a pound and you chop up some apple or you chop up some peppers and you look at the meat and you look at the fresh ingredient, your gut kind of tells you that's a little too much, but that's not enough. And all you do then is once you say, like, in your head, this is going to work, before you put that fresh ingredient, weigh it. Weigh it in grams. Now you have your grams per pound that you used. And you might say, that was a little much on the pepper, so I'm going to cut it by 10%. But you're comfortable anyway. And you reduce it by 10% and you make your batch. You might say, well, a little bit more, and you're comfortable. Or you might make another test batch. It's totally up to you. But that's, I like to do 1 pound test batch, because you can buy pre-ground pork, chicken, beef in 1 pound packages. And that's it's totally worth doing especially if you're new, because not only have you never made this particular variety before, you've never made anything before, your intuition lacks. I'm at a point now, I don't do a lot of test batches unless I'm way out on a limb doing something I never did before. Like, what are these two meats combined with this other thing? If I did something radically wild, like I've never had a sausage with thin sliced celery in it. And right now in my head, I'm thinking, I don't know what I would do that with, but I feel like I want to do that. I'm going to test batch that. Tom's so fast. He said that our 2 decimal places should work now. I'm going to check him, see if he did it, see if he got it done. I tell you, this guy's good, folks. Let's pull up. I'm going to switch over. We'll pull up to Jamaican. Real world test scenario, Tom. Let's see how this works. So I've got the Jamaican jerk chicken. I'm going to say we have 8.75 pounds. Update. Boom. Yep, it works. He's got it working now. Fixed. That's probably my error in how I formulated the spreadsheet. But so he's got that worked out. Now we can get into 2 point decimals. you don't need any more than 2 points of decimal there. I'm looking for any more questions. Hunter says the casing. So I think he was asking how much fits in a casing. If you buy the collagen casings from LEM, they will make about 20 to 25 pounds of sausage per package. They're only about 8 inches long, but they're like accordioned. And it's really a lot. It's really a lot. If it's a natural casing, there isn't an answer because they're all different lengths. And they all have some variation in diameter as you go. So that's another reason I like the collagens. And I'm looking for another one. So in here, King of Biltong, Anton says, what other than beef or pork fat would you add to the chicken sausage? So I used brisket fat in that chicken sausage recipe. And that was part. And Anton, I really wish you would have been there Saturday night because you missed out. Were you there? You did show up, didn't you? Because you kind of came and went. That chicken sausage with that brisket fat addition was fantastic. I'm going to tell you that if you do what I did, you don't really need it. Chicken skin is almost all fat. If you take a big piece of chicken skin, you put it in a frying pan, you fry it till it's crunchy, like a chicharron, it there's not much left of it at that point. And you render out a tremendous amount of fat. So that fat was gilding the lily. If you wanted to add fat to a chicken sausage because you were using skinless chicken or breast, God forbid, to make a sausage, other than pork or beef, I'm not sure. I wouldn't want to use like a lamb or a mutton fat because it has a stronger flavor. If you had a really clean, you know, grass-fed lamb fat, but I just see other uses for that. I don't know. That's probably about all I would use. But if you were to, again, use chicken thigh, and especially if you use skin, you don't really need any additional fat. If you want more on that, Anton, or more on the question, like you have an idea, tell me what it is and I'll tell you what I think of it. Halahim says, do you have a favorite book or books on sausage making? You know, I read several of them getting ready to do that presentation and I was underwhelmed by them. Most of them are very kind of opinionated on you need to do this. And then the other issue I have with them is both basically just recipe books with a little bit of commentary around it. And if it was a recipe book, it would sell for like $12, but they're selling them for like $30 because they're a book, you know, instruction manual. I think that this is one that if you watch a few videos of people actually doing it, you just take the information I gave you today, you start playing with it, you'll probably be happier than trying to follow somebody's book. And in time, what you'll do is you'll develop your own methods. You'll say, screw Jack, I'm doing everything in one day. Or screw Jack, I'm going to season and grind one day, and I'm going to stuff. The next day. I'm going to mix the stuff the next day. I'm going to season and grind and mix, and then I'm going to do all of that. But the one thing I'm going to tell you right now, you need to. I don't care if you use natural collagen. I don't care what. You really need to let that stuff sit a day in the fridge once it's stuffed. But otherwise, you might come up with totally different procedures. Hunter says, which dye do you recommend? Biggest I have is 1/4 inch, I think, dye. I think he's talking about the plate, the grinder plate. When you buy a grinder, you're going to get fine and coarse. And if you buy the STX or some of the others, you're going to get fine and coarse. And again, one's called the wagon wheel. And it's whatever your preference is. But I will tell you that I never do a fine grind. I'm not that worried about what the diameter of the hole is. You know, one grinder might come with 1/4 inch. One might be just a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller, 3/8. I don't know. I'm going to go with the coarser grinder as my go-to. I have never twice grinded to do a sausage, and I almost never do a fine grind. It's harder on the grinder. It takes longer, and I prefer a little bit of texture to my meat. Even when I'm grinding beef and I'm going to make hamburger, one grind through the coarse grinder. There, I don't see any more. Freeze-dried peppers, high-temperature cheese cubes. Okay, I don't know if this is a question, but I think this is really a suggestion, and it's pretty interesting stuff. Freeze-dried peppers, high-temperature cheese cubes, salt, pepper, sage, bacon, venison, and 75% pork is good sausage, says Ghoulie. I'll tell you something on the freeze-dried peppers, or even a dehydrated pepper, or a vegetable that you might incorporate, like celery I said earlier. There is a value in using a dried product in something like a sausage, because when you rehydrate those, you get a flavor extraction that's really, really great, really, really intense. So if I was using a freeze-dried or a dried product, I would take the amount of liquid that was going to go on my sausage, I would rehydrate those in there, and then I would add the remainder of the liquid and the rehydrated to it, and I would hold that right until I mixed, because those are going to be a lot more delicate once rehydrated, and if they go through the grinder, they're going to get just obliterated. They're just going to get mushed in. Now, if you want to just spread the flavor and maybe not have any visual on them, maybe that's what you want to do, but I would want to keep some visual. And then Justin says, have I ever made hot dogs or bologna? No, it's not my thing. It's not my thing. Maybe someday it will be, but I don't do that. High temp cheese. So Hunter says high temp cheese ? So there is cheese that's specifically made so that it doesn't melt at the temperatures we smoke or cook sausage at. It's fairly expensive. It comes in little cubes, and that means you can make a sausage that contains cheese, and when you cook it and you go to eat it and you cut it open, the cheese doesn't go spooge and come out. I haven't really worked with it much. I am of the opinion in general that cheese in sausage doesn't really come through very well for me. There is a beehive cheddar that Chef Tim Love uses in his elk sausage that has a really great flavor hit, but I think it's more the honey that's in it than it is the cheese itself. So I personally, this is the beauty of this. I personally find the flavor contribution of cheese inside a sausage to be minimal, but I'm with my wife. Like when you give me cheddar, I want sharp. I want it to cut your face when you eat it. I want old cheese. And so I don't think you're going to find a high temp, really sharp cheddar. And so that's all use. Hunter says the best part is the cheese splooge. That's again a personal thing. You do whatever you want with your splooge, buddy. Anyway, with that, let's wrap things up. Hope you enjoyed today's show. I didn't manage to get through it. Again, I am brain fogged and tired and hoarse from being at a workshop for that many days, hanging out with people. But I hope those of you that saw or were in attendance for the presentation I gave at the workshop, that this expands things to a higher level, makes it more clear what to do. I don't want you to ever be intimidated by any of the skill development stuff. This isn't hard. That's why I said we've been making it for 5,500 freaking years, guys. If some dude 5,500 years ago without an Amazon account, because they didn't have that, without any electricity, could make sausage, so can you. This will be something that will be intimidating up until you make your first sausage. As soon as you make it, you'll be fine. You'll learn things. One of the things I left out today, when you get a casing and you've gotten past when you're stuffing, blowing out casings, and you don't normally blow out casings, you still will. Everybody still does. Okay. Everybody has a casing blowout once in a while. But when you've gotten to where you're not doing it all the time and you start running a casing and you get a blowout and you're like, damn it. And you cut it off and retie it, retwist it, re-butcher swine it, whatever you do. And you start going again and it bursts again. Just throw that hook. And if it's a natural one, throw that whole one out. If it's a package, throw it away. It sucks. But, you know, I had a batch I was making and, you know, every 6-7 inches, I'm getting like not a little pinhole either. Like a little pinhole, a lot of times you can just keep going. It'll be fine. It'll kind of heal itself up a bit in the refrigerator. You get a poof where you get a meat spooge, right? And you get more than two or three really quick. There's something wrong with that particular tube. And it's probably worth just jettisoning it. I kept screwing with it. And I finally like, now I'm like, is it me? Am I tired? Got another one out, put it on, and no more problems. When you're feeding your casing on that tube, the collages are pretty tough. But you could still kind of nick the edge of, they call it the horn. That's the part the meat comes out. Be careful with that. Another thing is, if you're like, I want to make snack sticks, you really need to put some thought, like really like stuff like your pinky size, into the piece of equipment you buy. And contact the manufacturer and make sure that's going to work. If you buy some, it comes with, let's say, three tubes. So one's like a great big one for like making ring bologna. One's about, say, the size of like a big brat. The other one's kind of like breakfast sausage. It doesn't come with any more. And you go out and buy a horn that fits it, but it's really, really thin. You might have a lot of problem pushing through there. That's a lot of force. So that's something else to look at. Tips on air in the stuffing part. Is that a problem? This will be the last one. I'm going to wrap up on my throat shot. It can be. It doesn't have to be. They make a little pricker tool. And you get a little bit of air. You hit it with that little pricker tool, and that puts a hole in the casing in a way that doesn't cause it to rupture. You know what I use? I use a toothpick. I'm going to cook it anyway. I'm not worried about it. If I was making a fermented sausage, I would not do that. I would not want to risk potentially injecting a bacterium in there. But think about that even. The meat was all exposed to the air. It went through the grinder. It did all that other stuff. So I probably wouldn't do it just as like just being a little bit of a nervous Nelly or whatever. But it probably isn't that big of a deal either. But that little pricker tool will work. The other thing you will have to work at kind of the dexterity in the hand motion to where you get where you stuff enough before you as you let it come out that it's really full without overfilling it. That will just come with time, because if you have a lot of air pockets, you're probably underfilling. But a lot of times when you first start moving that sausage through that end piece, you can get air in the end because it can't get out because you've tied it. So a couple of things there. One, move the meat to the end of the horn so you can see it, like it's starting to come out, before you put your casing on. And that way you don't have like a big balloon at the end of it. And two, take your prick tool and prick the tip. And that way you have the air can get out of that initial start. And from there, just do some research. Go watch people make sausages. Tons of people with videos on YouTube showing you how to do it. Everybody has a little bit different way, and you might like their way better than my way. And again, I would stay away from the electric stuffers unless you really, really vet the vendor. Because the one that Vivor sent me, oh, it was nice, man. It was nice to step on the thing, and the sausage comes out, and then let up, and the sausage stops, and adjust your speed, and it was faster, but it wasn't great. It wasn't great when it broke. And I went through, like, if I'm going to spend $500 on a stuffer, it better not break. And everyone I found, there were customers had them for 10 years and they were happy, or people had them 10 days and sent them back. So that's just something, you know, you're going to have to, I would look really hard if you're going to buy electric. I want the return policy of whoever you're buying it from is, that to me is more important than what the quality rating is, because if there's a problem, any extra parts you need, seals, pressure plates, whatever, once you're happy, you know you're going to keep it a long time, go ahead and buy them, because these things also tend to go in and out of production, and now you can't get the pressure plate or something like that. And pressure plates cracking is also a thing that tends to happen with them sometimes. Anyway, with that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. I want to remind you guys, if you like the show and you want to support us, one of the things you can do is join the Member Support Brigade, which we showed you today. We do have that tool, but we have a lot of other great stuff in the MSB. And when you join the MSB, you get a bunch of discounts. Now, I'm not going to show you the discount page, because then you'd be able to screenshot and get all the discounts for free. And that's not fair to the paying members or the vendors. But right there on the benefits, that's where you'll find that. You'll see some downloads, some videos, some YouTube videos that you can actually get the MP4. Those are really old, because everybody can strip videos off YouTube now. But it's a great way to support the show at about 18 cents an episode. Another way you can support us is by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. I'll have some stuff. I have something for you on that in just a minute. But the other thing we now have, we have a new swag shop. And we have some really killer designs. Tom has taken over the swag shop. You can see some of the designs that we have there. You can find that at tspswag.com. If you go there, you can sign up. I also have for you today the item of the day, cooking item, probably not you're going to use for sausage, though, But the meter block wireless smart meat thermometer system is on sale today at a pretty good discount. It's 21% off. And they do cost like $229, I think, regularly. So it's a pretty big discount. These things are awesome. They work with an app on your phone. It comes with four probes. You stick it in the meat, and you set up a cook on your phone, and you can monitor everything from your phone. They can actually connect to, you can use straight Bluetooth, or they can connect to your network. So you're really never, if you have internet connection on your phone, you're never out of range. Especially like when you close the door on an oven and have foil over it, that can cause some issues. They are a great tool. I'll talk more about them tomorrow because I'm worn out, but they're on sale. They're great for cooking Thanksgiving. They're great for cooking roasts and stuff like that because a big piece of meat. They're also fine for chops, steaks, etc. if they're thick. So 3/4 inch and up, you kind of go in the side, you push your probe in. So there's a little line that says go this far in and no further. That gives you ambient and the core temperature of the meat. They're great for that. Thin cut steaks, thin cut chops, etc., they do not work for. They're a pretty substantial size probe in diameter. And so a thin piece, you know, you want to keep them in the center. Otherwise, you're actually reading the temperature of the grill. It just doesn't work. Most thin meat, you really don't need a meat thermometer for. But I have an instant read thermometer that's better for stuff like that. But again, for cooking your turkey and stuff, this is fantastic. And the phone will literally alert you, tell you when to take it out, continue to temp read it for you when it's at rest. Your all your stuff's recorded in the app. So if you had a cook that came out really good, you can literally go back and look at what you've done. It gives you time to the end. These are great. I've meant to bring it around for a long time, but they're really expensive. So when I saw them on sale and Thanksgiving coming up, I brought it around. It also would be if you're looking for, but as expensive as it is, make sure they don't have one already. You have a foodie in your life, and especially someone who likes to cook meat. This would be an amazing gift. I would hug your neck if you brought me one, and I already have one, let alone have two. Great piece of equipment. So you can find that by shopping at tspaz.com. Link to the show notes below. And I've got to check out. Hunter says he wants the gray market flag. Tell you what, guys, if you want the Agoras flag behind me, I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes when I put them up. And maybe we'll talk about that more this week as well. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.